Welcome to the Annex Wealth Management SWAT podcast. This is episode 100. It is Monday, April 22nd, 2024. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's insight and perspective from members of the Annex Wealth Management Investment Committee. Joining us today, Dr. Todd Voigt, Chief Investment Strategist. Welcome.
Thank you.
Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management. Welcome to you.
Yes, thank you. And welcome to everybody. And how exciting. It's our 100th episode. We should have balloons or maybe at least cake for this. That would have been nice. But thank you to everybody who comes back, who is coming back week after week. If you're new to the program, thanks for joining us. Please do rate us, share. So let's dive in as far as taking a look at what happened for this past week. I'd like to give a little bit of a review as far as the big market narrative. A lot of it centered around Iran and Israel. We also had some hot retail sales report numbers. Lots of Fed speak. Thankfully, they're now in the quiet period or the blackout period, so we don't have to hear from the Fed officials until they next meet again. But there was a lot out there that I think has reminded people that markets are risky. But when we look to the week ahead of us here, I think some of the biggest data releases, Tuesday we have S&P Global Purchasing Manager Index. That's always interesting as far as some of that qualitative data about the health of manufacturing and services. Wednesday we get durable goods orders for March. What's going on there? I especially like looking at machinery orders. Seems like the machinery orders is really a good way to get your finger on the pulse of manufacturing, and does tend to be fairly highly correlated with future earnings per share for the S&P 500. So that's one of the little details in that report that I like looking at. Thursday, we get the first quarter GDP numbers. It's the advance estimate. I like to call it the first guess as to what was growth. They're going to continue to revise these numbers, but the consensus is calling for about 2% annualized growth, which is still pretty healthy. It is a downshift from the 3.4% annualized growth that we had in the fourth quarter. And then on Friday, PCE, personal consumption expenditure deflator is coming out. That's the Fed's preferred measure of inflation. Consumer price index, the CPI, has been too hot to handle for about 3 months in a row. We're going to have to see if that's confirmed by the Fed's preferred measure, this deflator, which is a little bit more broader based, a little bit different weighting scheme in there. The consensus is calling for about a 2.6% inflation reading, which is a mild acceleration from the previous month's 2.5%. So lots in front of us on the macro front, but getting into more the micro, into the earnings, what's on the calendar?
Well, I'd add too on that first quarter GDP report. I always find them interesting. And at the end of every month, you have a GDP report. First one, like you said, is the estimate. The second one is a revision. And the third one's the final. In the third one, you always have corporate profits for the broader economy. And it's just an interesting first look at what GDP is coming out to be for the first quarter. But looking ahead on earnings, you got a big earnings week. About 40% of earnings are reported this coming week. Tuesday, we got earnings on Freeport, Metals Mining, Google, Thermo Fisher, a medical device, Visa, Financial. Thursday, you got Amazon, Merck, Meta, Valero, and Honeywell. So you got a busy week if you're a research analyst. Going into strengths, why don't you just kick it
off? Sure. Yeah, I think as far as the strengths, when we look back, it was kind of hard to find a lot of strengths just given the market moves. Oftentimes, market price moves sort of dictate my feelings, right, as far as how does it color? Was it a good week? Was it a bad week? But you know, there was some strength. China's gross domestic product number, that was released for the first quarter. That was slightly stronger than expected, showing that they are likely to hit their 5% growth target, at least preliminarily, right? So they're looking for like around 5% growth for the year. It was about 5.3% year on year. But unfortunately, there was a little bit of weakness in March as far as industrial production and retail sales. But let's, you know, chalk that up, the China's GDP number being around target as a strength. Also, United Kingdom and Eurozone inflation that has been falling. It's interesting the difference in dynamics between U.S. inflation and then what we're seeing over in Europe. Ours, you had this little bit of a rebound, but theirs has been falling a lot more. Now, some of that is because their governments have different price supports and subsidization of like energy prices. So you get some wonkiness with the European numbers. But then the Beige Book in the United States, I thought that that was a mixed bag. So as far as the strength part, the beige book, the bright spot was the labor market improvement. A lot of the respondents were saying that labor supply is improving. So that's a good thing. And also not just the quantity of labor, but the quality of labor. It's apparently getting a little bit easier to find qualified workers. Another note in there is that wage growth, it's still good, but it has come down to what's been identified as more of this historical average. So just on that qualitative basis, that type of information, the labor market does look to be rebalancing. So I would say those were the biggest strengths. What did you see in the markets as far as strength?
In the commodity markets, of course, prices have been rising. So it's a reflection of broader economic growth. That's a strength. Tech will still be a leader in earnings growth. But I think the signal you're getting from the commodity market is an expectation of higher inflation, if you use that for any kind of forecasting. Like you said, Europe, PMIs are improving. Mm-hmm. Central banks there are expected to cut rates. Problem is the dollar's still strong.
Yep.
IMF recently increased the forecast for global growth, which is it kind of jives with a comment I think I made a month ago about the synchronization of global growth, which happens from time to time. And it's a big positive for everybody. But you go through a period, just kind of back up to the commodity and inflation part, that you go through periods of higher inflation, people tend to spend more. I can remember in the 70s, you'd go to the grocery store right away once you got paid because prices were going up the next week.
The mantra in a higher inflation period is buy early and buy often because you don't know what that dollar is going to be worth, a month or a year from now.
Another strength is in the markets. There's a broadening out, the participation. AI kind of flowed into, an attraction for cyclical value.
Mm-hmm.
Again, another reflection of solid economic growth. U.S. oil production, I would also consider as a strength because it's buffering what you saw last Friday with what happened with Israel attacking Iran and Syria.
Sure.
Is that, of course, 40, 50 years ago, that would have presented a big problem for the markets. Barely a shimmer. In fact, the U.S. Treasury safe haven yields were about 4.64 before that happened, dropped to 4.59, back up to 4.60s on Friday. I mean, so it's almost like nothing happened.
Yeah. It is interesting how that, maybe it's the limited response where instead of the conflict escalating, it might be de-escalating, where every time there's the retaliation seems to be a little bit, I guess, like more contained and a little bit more limited than what originally precipitated the retaliation. So maybe that's something. But yeah, the U.S. oil production, the dynamics today are so much different than what they were even pre-financial crisis. In the 70s, we were very beholden to OPEC and their production. Now we have so much more homegrown production that some of these conflicts, yes, it obviously still matters, but maybe not quite as much or in the same way as what it did back then.
Right. A lot of incentive, too, to also try to keep oil prices down in an election year. So you kind of look the other way on sanctions or let them get away with avoiding them, but we're working around them. What do you got for weaknesses?
Yeah, I would say some of the weaknesses on the macro front when, I had mentioned the beige book before about some of the strength there, especially from the labor market, but there was a bit of a more, I guess, bummer of a story coming from the beige book as well, which is that growth is only slight to modest growth. Now, in the Fed's vernacular, they will say like no growth, slight growth, modest growth, then moderate, right? And then basically broader base. So that's kind of the progression. And it's no longer moderate, it's only modest growth. But consumer spending is also beginning to slow. So in the qualitative information, they said that as a whole, consumers' spending is slowing. It's really more focused on some of the almost the last vestiges of people trying to do like the whole YOLO experience. You only live once, and so let's do these trips and let's eat out. That apparently is beginning to slow. And also noting that people are hypersensitive to prices, where if there's a price increase, people are willing to switch products, switch their allegiances a lot more. So I would say that's prudent for consumers to do, but it is really a weakness. And perhaps we're going to see some of that weakness begin to form come this summer.
Another weakness that just made me think of the markets is in earnings calls. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see where companies can surprise on the upside in terms of revenue. Look at Netflix last Friday, talked about 9 million subscribers, yet the stock fell 5% because they guided lower. And so talking to research analysts like Jason, Trevor, and Ken, and others, I sense that that's the prominent factor that's going on. You're seeing that theme play out through their earnings calls, is the lower guidance, is if there's a weak spot in the market.
That's an interesting phenomenon going on, too. I looked at Procter & Gamble's announcement that came out, and I don't have an opinion on the stock or anything, but I just noticed that they missed on the sales number, but they had a rather rosy outlook for growth, which, I don't know, I just find that in this type of environment, if consumers are becoming much more price sensitive, won't they have to push volume more than price?
Right away when you said that, I'm thinking volume. They've had price increases for 3 years, but the astute analysts will look at what's going on with volumes, because, you know, they've gotten away for quite a while. They're a big consumer staple, but it's going to come down to volumes. We have ways to measure that in, in the drill down on company analysis, but you know, interesting observation. The other, we might move on. Higher mortgage rates have been weakening the housing market. You were looking for a revival in housing. January, March saw mortgage rates going up, and housing start, all the three, I call them the three housing indicators, starts, permits, and existing home sales are all down. In fact, I think it was home sales in March saw the biggest decline in 16 months.
Yeah. Now, in fairness, that was after a huge surge in the previous month. But still, the higher mortgage rates, that sudden rebound going from around 6.5% on a 30-year to above 7%, that probably had a big effect on housing activity there.
And that ties in with 10-year treasury yield. It's kind of benchmarked to 10-year treasuries. And what's interesting about that is, talking about weakness in the markets, the bond market and stocks for that matter, but I'll pick on the bond market in particular, would have had three straight years of being down. I know I sound like a broken record, but three straight years of being down through March of 23. The big rally in bonds that put out a 5% return for 23 all occurred in the last 2 months. And then what happened in January? Interest rates are going back up, along with mortgage rates, of course, and bonds generally are negative year to date, except for maybe high yield. You know, so we'll segue that into opportunities. And I would say I don't overlook the attractiveness of bonds from a risk-adjusted standpoint. You're not going to get the, you know, the home run or the 10 to 12% equity type return or something, but you're going to get a solid yield that you never got before out of those bonds.
Yeah, in order to really get those equity-like returns, you have to take on a lot of risk in terms of some of these like zero coupon bonds, very long duration, and make a good bet as to if we're going to go from like 4.6 down to 3.6, right? So maybe if you have that type of view and you get that type of move, you can get some equity-like returns. But it does seem like it should be a little bit more modest as far as your expectations. One of the things that I've been talking to clients a lot about is in terms of individual fixed income, as opposed to through funds. I mean, through funds, you know, that's great in terms of the liquidity, the diversification. But if you have an individual bond, you have the luxury to be able to hold it, to ride through it.
Right.
And I know that's something that you've talked a lot about as far as an opportunity is, you know, where is it that you can find the opportunities to buy them at a yield that you like and be able to just hold it until it matures?
Right. A couple of things real quick, and I'm glad you mentioned that, is if you start at 1,000, you end at 1,000. Now, it might, the bond price might go to 900, 1,100, 900, 1,100. If it's 900, like it would be today, you say, well, I'm just going to hold it to maturity and get my whatever my yield to maturity is.
Yep.
It's not the segment of time of what the return is that matters, whether it's 3 months or your 2023 return. It's your yield to maturity on that bond. But I'll mention this, and I'll say it really fast, and it sounds a little complicated, but what's really unique now about individual bonds is you can control that risk a lot better and say, you know, high coupon bonds are less sensitive to interest rate changes than low coupon bonds. 5 years ago, I said, this whole bond market's like a big zero coupon bond. It's highly sensitive to interest rates. Well, then you saw 2022. Now you got higher coupon bonds that you can choose from to kind of regulate the amount of risk you want to take and sensitivity of that bond portfolio. To that point, that property of bonds, when you own individual bonds, the risk of yields going higher, let's say the 10-year is approaching 5, goes to 5.5. Mm-hmm. Well, that loss on that bond, well, we can handle that because we just hold a bond to maturity, as you mentioned. But that loss isn't as great as the gain if rates go down.
Yep.
And it's kind of a complicated thing, but once you really think about it, it's not that complicated. There's a sort of this asymmetry when it comes to the bonds that I like, and you can control for that.
Yeah, that beautiful thing they call convexity, right?
Exactly. And that's for big changes, right?
Sure.
You know yourself. Big changes in interest rate. Well, you know, how often do we have big changes in interest rates? Well, you just had the Fed raise rates 11 times in
going from basically zero.
That's a big change,
that's
and that's when it really matters.
Yeah, but now if we're talking about maybe them trimming around the edges, right?
Duration.
If they wait until July instead of June to cut, or if they only do, one or two cuts this year instead of three, right? We're talking, a difference of like 0.25 percentage points. You do see big moves amplified by the markets, but if you can kind of ride through that and you kind of think about, what does 25 basis points really mean to the 10-year treasury if you can hold it to maturity?
Right.
It's one of those things where, you mark it to market every day. It might be annoying, but you can maybe just rethink about the bonds, about, I can hold this. Now, if you're in a fund, you can't necessarily do that. You are subject to the whims of other participants, the other people on the bus, right? If they're getting a little rowdy and if they're throwing things out the windows, right? Everybody kind of gets punished for that.
Right. And I'll just mention this real quick. But at this level of interest rates, I always say, and now it doesn't matter if you own funds or bonds. I always like to say, know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference about Annex and that ability to understand what's going on in the individual, in the bond funds. And know, when to hold them, when to fold them kind of thing. And it doesn't matter at this point because rates are high for all bonds.
Yep.
But to your point, those people that own the funds, they do have to worry about what the Fed's going to do. The ones that don't, that own individual bonds, they actually could care less. I mean, they're going to hold a bond to maturity typically. We've got to move along here, but other opportunities, I noted small cap, cyclical value, industrials are looking good. Another opportunity is in the equity markets where valuations, they haven't been brought down to some, attractive, screaming buy level, but the AAII bullish survey I checked this morning, I love that nonprofit organization for individual investors. I've subscribed to it since I was in college and I don't need it now. I could do without it, but I always like their stuff. So their sentiment, bullish sentiment, is down to 38. I mean, there's a lot of bearishness out there, which is a positive for stocks in general. So
And I would say that almost being able to segue into the weaknesses, because when I was thinking of opportunities and weaknesses, it's kind of the same thing, right? You've got April showers bring May flowers is the saying. And unfortunately, the weaknesses, you have to get through April. You have to get through the showers. And it feels like that's what we're going through right now. And I mean, in fairness, we've been so accustomed to low volatility. This pullback in the market has only been around 5% for the headline index, right? I mean, that's almost nothing. In a given year, you can expect a 10% pullback, if not somewhat more than that. And so we've maybe been lulled into a sense of complacency, but you do get some of that repricing, valuations coming down. I always like to think about it in terms of the price to earnings, where right now we are going through where the prices have been coming down, but what's been going on with the earnings, right? Have those expectations and our own expectations, have those been coming down as well? Or have they been staying relatively flat or improving? And I think broadly speaking, especially as you indicated, maybe the smaller cap cyclical area, the earnings are still looking okay. And so it presents an opportunity.
Yeah, and the valuation then comes down. The price coming down, earnings going up, the combination is you got lower valuations. Not screaming buy valuations. Fear and greed index is really low at 38. You might think it, Derek tells me it ranges between 40 and 60, and for a long time it'll sit at 70.
Sure.
To me, another bullish contrarian indicator. But the point that you made about the low volatility in the returns, the S&P is only off 5% since March 31st.
Mm-hmm.
We're not in a, you know, major corrective phase, but you get people that freak out, and then you throw the attack of by Israel on Iran in there, and it just gets people, you know,
sure.
You're only down 5% off a peak.
Yeah, it feels worse than what it's been. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, it's everything's still positive year to date, you know, on equity returns, no matter what index you look at.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess the problem is a lot of people, maybe they weren't in the index or they weren't in the markets during that time. And maybe they bought at the end of March. And that's one of the things that with some of the flow data,
right. It
does really seem like people have been exiting the markets more around if the market goes down because you know, humans, we do tend to overreact to the price movements, not view it as an opportunity. It's like it's viewed much more as a threat.
Right. Speaking of threats, perfect. Let's roll right into threats. We got the market, I've said before, reconciling what the Fed's going to do with their own expectations. Again, everybody knows the market expected 4 to 6 rate cuts. At the beginning of the year, I smile because I find it humorous. But then they revise that lower and lower and lower. And now everybody's talking maybe 1 or 2, that one in July and maybe another one in December,
mm-hmm.
because they're not going to do who's the James Comey director of FBI attention-grabbing thing where they're going to mess with the election. So July, December is kind of the target dates for any rate cuts, but that's what the market's also dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that one of the biggest threats is obviously on the geopolitical front as far as what's going on in the Middle East, but then also we're our own worst enemies in terms of just sentiment, the extent to which does the negative sentiment begin to snowball a little bit. And I mean, it is a threat, and so we obviously have to balance opportunities against threats, also think about the probabilities of those. And I would still think that whole idea of April showers bringing May flowers is likely going to hold, where not to view pullbacks as a prelude to further declines or as though a bear market is beginning to form, but more that it's just a stumbling of the bull market here.
To your analogy there, I would say April May showers and throw in July, bring September, October flowers.
Yeah, it's not quite as poetic, but might be more accurate at
but
least.
But, you know, yeah. I state again that date with destiny in November with the election. It's generally a pretty positive year for equities. But you mentioned a key word, probability.
Mm-hmm.
The market's pricing in these events. Event risk is not something you would invest based off of. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But there is a probability associated with it. So if the probability is greater and greater, the U.S. is going to go to war, like I'm thinking of 1990, August, Iraq rolls into Kuwait, and then, you know, and then we bomb in January, and all of a sudden the market rallies. You know, mm-hmm. you get that uncertainty resolved. Well, you got the same kind of thing with the election, too. Uncertainty is going to get resolved the first or second Tuesday in November.
I always say the second Tuesday,
but
at least there won't be tanks rolling in, you know, I mean,
at least, as far as
I know.
We would have a long list of threats. We don't have enough time, right?
How many more do you want to do?
No, I think that's probably good enough.
Well, we could talk about tariffs, we could talk about inflation.
There's all the trouble in the world, right? I mean, those are always the threats. But then again, what are the probabilities? And at some point, you have to realize that the probabilities are low enough that it doesn't really pay to modify your strategy associated with them, because it's what's the payoff, what's the probability. If the probability is low enough, not that you want to ignore it, but it does, you have to keep that as part of your perspective.
Last one, I'll just, if I get a chance to throw it in there, is a big one, is tariffs. And as the trade balance gets worse, then the subject of tariffs, and you're starting to hear it on both sides of the political aisle, and tariffs are not good. They're inflationary by nature. Domestic producers can raise their prices. It's not good. It doesn't fix the trade deficit. No more than devaluation fixes the trade
and
deficit.
It panders to a particular political class. I mean, that's really the purpose of them.
Yeah, so going down that path is definitely a threat for the market and the economy.
Annex Wealth Management SWAT Podcast, episode 100. How about that? What is our headline strength this week?
Global growth is a little better than expected.
Headline weakness?
Higher mortgage rates dampening housing.
Headline opportunity?
April showers bring May flowers.
And a headline threat?
Well, there's many.
too many to mention.
The market reconciling the Fed may not even cut rates.
Dr. Todd Voigt, Chief Investment Strategist, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management, thank you.
Thank you.
Annex Wealth Management, LLC, is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit annexwealth.com. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is subject to change without notice. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and don't necessarily reflect on those of Annex Wealth Management, LLC. Information presented should not be construed as tax, legal, or investment advice, or a recommendation or a solicitation for the sale of any product or strategy. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from qualified professionals to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Investments involve risk. Neither Annex Wealth Management, LLC, nor its podcast participants shall be liable for losses resulting from decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on this podcast.